But I think we're running out of time. I want to thank you all for listening. This is KBOO 90.7, your FM dial. I'm Joe Uris. I'm sitting in for the wonderful hosts of Positively Revolting. I'll do this, I guess, for a few more weeks, and then they'll be back, and that'll be good. I think I'm hearing music coming up, and I think I'm done, and I thank you all. I'll see you on Tuesday. Abe Proctor and I will be doing our usual show. And hopefully we'll have some information and some amusing stories to tell.
Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Sex Workers film series. The film to screen on August 2nd will be Mutantes, Punk Porn Feminism. Is pornography an acceptable form of expression? And if so, can distinctions be drawn between different forms of pornography? This documentary raises a number of questions, seeking to provide the answers from the perspective of pro-sex feminism, which asserts that pornography must be wrested from patriarchal control, and that in the hands of women and sexual minorities, it can become a tool of liberation. Again, that's Mutantes, screening as part of the Sex Workers film series, Saturday, August 2nd, at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBU Community Radio and Peña Flamenca de Portland are proud to co-sponsor Lily Last and Pepe Rafael on Friday, July 25th at 7:30 p.m. Pepe Rafael of Pepe and the Bottle Blondes will team up with Lily Last of Stomptown Flamenco for an evening of flamenco. Again, that's Lily Last and Pepe Rafael on Friday, July 25th at 7:30 p.m. at the Steep and Thorny Way to Heaven, located at Southeast 2nd Avenue and Madison Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events. And this is KBOO Portland. The time is 9:02 a.m. It's time for One Land, Many Voices. And today, they'll be looking at the human costs of Israel's bombardment and ground invasion of occupied Gaza. Coming up at 10 is Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre, followed at 10:15 by Flashpoints with more on Israel's assault on the Gaza Strip. And international law expert Francis Boyle discusses Israel's actions as a potential genocide. This is your community radio. Keep it locked right here.
Welcome to One Land, Many Voices on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon. My name is Zaha Hassan.
And I'm Ned Roche. Since this year's commemoration of the Nakba, the catastrophe which saw the ethnic cleansing of more than three-quarters of the indigenous Arab population of Palestine in 1948, the situation in the occupied Palestinian territories and in Israel has been spiraling out of control and into violence. On May 15th, Nakba protests in the West Bank town of Betunia saw the killing by Israeli occupation forces of two unarmed Palestinian teenagers, Nadim Nawara and Mohammed Odeh. The killing, captured on security cameras at the scene, showed the two teens were not involved in clashes with Israeli soldiers at the time of their killing. Then on June 12th, three Israeli yeshiva students, Eyal Yifrach, Gilad Sha'ar, and Naftali Frankel, went missing near a settlement colony in the West Bank. The Israeli military initiated a massive campaign across the West Bank purportedly to find the missing students, but which resulted in the arrest and detention of hundreds of Palestinians, the ransacking of over 1,000 homes, and the raiding of charities and organizations associated with Hamas. In spite of Israeli government claims that Hamas was responsible for the abductions, Hamas denied involvement. In response to the Israeli campaign in the West Bank and Israel's rearrest of Palestinian prisoners released in the prisoner exchange for Gilad Shalit, Hamas fired 18 rockets into Israel, which resulted in no casualties. Israel responded by bombing 34 sites in Gaza. On June 30th, the bodies of the three Israeli teens were found near Hebron in a shallow grave. In a public statement after the discovery of the bodies, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu ominously promised that Hamas would pay.
A wave of settler violence immediately ensued in the West Bank, including the July 2nd abduction of a 16-year-old Palestinian from Shafat in East Jerusalem, Mohammed Abu Khdir, who was apparently forced to drink gasoline before being set on fire. His charred body was later found in a forested area in Jerusalem. Three Jewish Israelis confessed to the crime, which they claimed was retribution for the killings of the Israeli teens. 2 days after Mohammed's murder, Palestinian-American teen Tariq Abu Khdir, a cousin to Mohammed, was brutally beaten by Israeli police while handcuffed in the backyard of his uncle's home. The brutal beating, which included repeated baton blows to his head, was captured on camera. Then, on July 8th, less than a week after the discovery of the bodies of the Israeli teens, Israel launched what it dubbed Operation Protective Edge, the stated mission of which is to stop Hamas rocket fire into Israel. As of July 15th, more than 190 Palestinians have been killed, over three-quarters of them civilians. Over 200 homes have been destroyed, with hundreds of others extensively damaged. Thus far, there have been no fatalities from Hamas rocket fire into Israel, and the damage inside Israel from the Hamas rockets has been minimal. To help us make sense out of what is taking place in Gaza now are Mohammed Nabil, a Palestinian student living in Portland, who is with us live in the studio for the first segment of the program, and Raji Sarani, a renowned human rights attorney who will join us in the second segment from his office in Gaza.
It is a pleasure to welcome Mohammed Nabil to KBOO. Mohammed is a Palestinian from Gaza who's been in Portland for 2 years earning a master's degree. He hopes to attend Evergreen State College in Olympia this fall in preparation for fulfilling one of his dreams, a PhD program in ethnic studies at Cal Berkeley. Mohammed is active in Students United for Palestinian Equal Rights, a wonderful organization at Portland State University. Several days ago, the Israelis bombed a house on Mohammed Street in Gaza, not only destroying that home, but also rendering Mohammed's family home uninhabitable. Mohammed, thank you so much for coming to talk with us this morning, and welcome to One Land, Many Voices.
Thank you very much for having me here.
It's difficult to imagine what you must be going through as the massive bombing of Gaza continues. How has the bombing affected your family?
You know, if you ask any Gazan living in South Gaza, North Gaza, or so on, you will find any of them have an experience of bombing. Even his neighbor, her neighbor, their house, their friend house, and etc. So I am one of the people, and my neighbor house was bombed the third day of the war, and all the house being bombed in one rocket. And it's affect all the three houses buildings for my family. All the interfaces of the buildings were demolished. And added to that, my uncle and his aunt and his son was injured. His son, which is my cousin, his name Yasser, he's injured in his belly, and yesterday he woke up from a coma, and he did a very, very hard surgery, cost him cutting half of his colon. And like till now, he's in the hospital suffering from the pain and from, you know, like thinking of all of his family and all of his cousins are now not at their houses and are now everyone separated, especially in a month like Ramadan when everybody come together and eat breakfast, iftar together and like have fun at the night and all of that. And it's a very, very important fact to say that the bombing was happening just 15 minutes before iftar meal, which is a very, very hard time to think of it. Like, people are ready to eat, fasting all day since morning, and then like being surprised at the end of the day, like that their neighbor's house being bombed, and not like that, but their house is being affected and their son and their father being injured. That's really hard. And it's a very, very important thing to say as well, that the notice for the bombing just was 5 minutes. Like, imagine. And I was yesterday talking with my cousin, who is the brother of the cousin that been injured. He told me I was suddenly, without any planning, outside of my home, coming back from, you know, a place. And suddenly he was there when the people alarmed the family. What's happened? Like, he start running like crazy, like mindless, telling everybody in the street to hide because there's a bombing in just a 5 minutes. At that time, he told me, everybody, all the kids was in the street. All the people was like looking at the, you know, like at the other, you know, like looking and hearing another rocket was in the area through the windows and through the roof of the houses. Like, imagine if my cousin wasn't at that time, like coming to the house, and he did not hear people talking about this alarm just 5 minutes.
And where could they run, even with 5 minutes notice that a, you know, bomb was going to be dropped from an F-16 or from however they sent that rocket into Gaza? Where could they have run to, and where could they have sought shelter?
That's the hardest thing. You cannot talk about 100% safety in Gaza. There is no shelter. There is no, like you call it here,
bomb shelters.
Bomb shelters, or you call it like the downstairs house, like the basement thing. Even this, we don't have it because our infrastructure and our way of building doesn't have that, because it costs a lot of money. Like, to build a basement from a concrete, it's really costly. Added to that, the structure of the house, like you're talking about 10 families, how will you invade or be like go away with the 10 families? Which things do you want to think to save? Like your kids, your very, very important papers, that if you did not have it afterwards, you will be in a big problem, or what? Like, there is no way to run. And even like those, like the only thing that they can do is like to hide at the very farthest point from the bombing place. So instead of being in the interface of the building, you will be at the very end. And instead of being in the top floor, you will be at the end, the first floor. That's the only thing that you can do there.
But Mohammed, the Israelis claim that what they're doing by this 5 minute notice is very humane. They're giving people 5 minutes to run out of the building before they destroy it.
Well, I'm really thankful for their humanity. You know, I cannot believe how human or how humane they are, because like 5 minutes, too much. You will go and bring your papers, bring your kids and go out, and then you want to watch your house being bombed. Really? I cannot make my egg in the breakfast in 5 minutes. I cannot be prepared in 5 minutes. Leaving the house, like from the very beginning of the house, like from the third floor till the end of the stairs, if you are an old man, it will take more than 10 minutes. Think of that. Mm-hmm. And let's think the humanity, think of that.
And of course, there's no way to leave Gaza from any border. Basically, Egypt's closed off the border and Israel is not letting anyone out. So you pretty much have a captive population while bombing is taking place throughout Gaza. Where exactly is your family home? In the north or?
My family is in Khan Yunis, North Gaza, just before Rafah. Mm. It's a city before Rafah City. And yeah, since 2005, like to be frank, since 2000, since the beginning of the Intifada and the demolishing of the Gaza airport, like being out of Gaza through Rafah borderline or through any point, is one of the hardest adventures that you might have in your life. It's really adventure. Like, I've tried it twice in my life, and each one has a story. So, and you're talking in Gaza about more than 1.7 million people. Everyone has a need to go out, and everyone, as we know in this world, have the right to leave and travel, but those not, because all what they have is one border that is effective, but it's not really, because of the Egyptian and the Israeli politics that will let just the people who have a very, very severe case, and if they are lucky, they will be out. Because the only way to leave Gaza is like to be a very sick and like halfway to death, or a very lucky student who have been trying many times to leave Gaza, or if you are a foreign citizenship passport carrier. Those are only ways that you can leave and come to Gaza through.
So the siege that you're talking about, where Gaza is completely sealed off and people cannot come in or out and goods do not come in or out without the approval or permission of the Israelis, and therefore there's malnutrition and lack of supplies. The hospitals, I know I heard a story recently about Shifa Hospital, the main hospital in Gaza, where there was no surgical thread for surgeries that needed to happen after the bombings, and they used just regular, ordinary sewing thread. Could you talk a little bit about what it's like to have these incredible demands, you know, people so injured, so severely injured, coming to the hospitals? Even in the best of situations, hospitals in this country would be overwhelmed. But in Gaza, where the supplies are so limited and the bombing right now is so intense, describe that for us a little bit, if you will.
In the normal conditions, hospitals in Gaza have a very, very lack of all the supplies. And there is all the equipment, the medical equipment, either old or not working or barely working. So, and because of the siege that it's coming and continuing since 2005 until now, keeping all of these equipment and materials and tools for medical things are very, very hard because of the siege, because of the continuing massacres. Like, you cannot talk about these supplies and these, like, if you can say that the hospitals can put all of these equipment in storage, but even that is not a choice, because in just in the past 6 years there's three major wars or operations happen on Gaza, like since Castled, since Pillar of Defense, and now protective edge. Each one was a real massacre, and each one have more than, like, Castlet was more than 5,000 injured. Like, imagine. I want to ask Oregon hospitals to, associate all of these numbers, but I cannot think of that because the situation is totally different. And the only thing that I can say is, like, there are a huge, a very, very miracle people there that working very, very hard. And from my position here, I'm really saluting them. They are having this overwhelming and continuing injuries and martyrs and all of these people, and they are handling it with a very, very, very few equipment and materials and tools. So the situation there is really hard. And added to that, like, talking about the hospitals in Gaza at this point cannot associate people with PTSD, which is considered legally as an injury from the war.
You know, it's hard for us to imagine having, you know, people going through a series of bombing campaigns over a course of decades. They've been bombed and they've gone through all these operations and watched their homes destroyed to be rebuilt and destroyed again. It's hard to understand, you know, how people are able to manage through that kind of suffering. I wish some of the reports that I've been looking at in the Arab media were available in the U.S. In English. There was one that really struck me of this Palestinian refugee mother of, I don't know how many children were in her home. I think she had maybe 9 people living in her home. But her home was destroyed, and she was standing amidst the rubble, and she was telling the news reporter, you know, very strongly that, you know, the Israelis can go ahead and destroy the home above her head and on her head, but she was going to be rebuilding in Israel, back where her real home and her real property is. And I just found that so amazing that she had the strength to even think about rebuilding when she's standing in the rubble, and it had, you know, the hope and dream still alive in her that it would be back on her property, which is now Israel. How do you, or how do people in Gaza manage to cope when these things happen so regularly and so repeatedly and so destructively?
This is a very, very remarkable story. But in Gaza, I think it's one of the normal stories. Because everybody there thinking of, you know, like, the right of return still exists. And this story is one of the stories that it will tell everybody that this right is a real right and it's not a fake. In Gaza now, people not just thinking of that we will build there. People think of hope and people think of the future and how it will be. Like, now it's hard, and now it's massacre, and now this building's being bombed, and now we lose relatives. But at the same time, people get together, having each other in their houses, and say, okay, in the future you will host me in your home, and in the future we will gather together, and maybe inshallah we will be in our home in Yafa or in Ramla or in Ashqalan or in Bisan, and remember these days and just think of how many people we offer and we lost to have this, and be proud of them and plant a tree for each of them to celebrate their life year after year, and tell them that their sacrifices are not just numbers, as here the media describe. There are people, and there are memories, and there are stories that it has been telling. But at this point, like, I can at some point understand, like, how hard, like, to tell each one's story. But at the same time, because there's a lot of people and the news coming one after one quickly, but each one has a real story. Each one is a human. Each one has memory, has friends, has people who love, and has people who care about him, and he care about people. Each injury, who we don't know yet, like, about, like, we are talking about more than 1,400 people injured. But all what we know now is just this one is injured. But in the future, and while this war will be over, we will discover how horrible it is and how many people these 1,400 people will affect. I'm sure there is more, like, you can talk about more than 10,000 people will be affected by those 1,400 people, because we will find people with disability here. You will find people who lose the whole functioning that they are thinking of their body can do.
Mohammed, could you perhaps choose one of those people, somebody who was killed or injured that perhaps you knew, and tell us something about that person, as you said, their hopes, their dreams, who that person was?
Well, there's two people, and I will start with an injured, who is my cousin. This person is 19 years old. He finishes high school, and he wanna go to the university, and he wanna study, like, car engineering, and he wanna build his own business and live his life. He's one of the people, like, everybody like him, everybody, like, trust him and say good things about him. He always like to talk to people, and he loved life, and he enjoyed being with people. And imagine, like, one of the things that he was telling to my cousin, his brother, that at this time he's having hard time to accept him being in the hospital, isolated, suffering, but isolated from his whole family in this hard time, that everybody is separated and everybody is out of their houses. Like, you cannot, can you talk about this personality, that even when he is on the bed, the injury bed, and thinking of all of these people? This is one person that I really personally know. Another person, I think his name Ahmed Elbatch. He is one of the Elbatch family who in Gaza, just a day or 2 days ago, were killed in a real massacres. Like, we were talking about massacres for families in Operation Castled, and like Samouni family and Pillar of Defense, and this one. And there is many people here, many families, like Ghannam family and Hamad family and Kawara family, which is my neighbors. All of them were killed. But this massacre is one of the hardest, and I couldn't believe. In one hit, in one rocket, 18 people. You can talk about, there is fathers, there is mothers, there is children, and there is kid, and there is this person who had a dream and who was doing his high school exams like about a month ago. Now, he's a martyr, and he was success with 89%. One of the hardest times, like, to think that he was in his Facebook, like, he was saying, like, thankfully I finished my exams, I done all what I can do, and wish me luck, because I have a dream and I have an university, I have to go. Now his success and one of the very touchy moments. His mom now is going around and giving people sweets, celebrating his success.
And there was 18 members of that family?
18 members. And from here, I want to say like something really small. I want to say Gazans are more than just people. Gazans are dreams, our families, our hope and future. They are souls and they are people like any people. They are just normal and they cannot take all of these. You know, you cannot think of them as an overhuman and superhuman. They are just humans like us, and we have to think of them as we think of ourselves. Thank you.
Thanks, Mohammed.
Thank you, Mohammed.
You've been listening to One Land, Many Voices on listener-supported, commercial-free KBOO 90.7 FM. Our guest has been Mohammed Nabil, a Palestinian student from Gaza currently residing in Portland. Thank you, Mohammed, for joining us in the studio today.
Thank you very much.
See, my brother died young. He was all alone. The drones exploded, burned everything we own. The moans of women, groans have grown. The tears and woes from broken bones. These stolen homes, living our chromosomes. See, we never forget. Nakba, we mourn. Imagine being torn from where you were born. It's wrong. Living in fear for so long, but with nowhere to go. I'm fighting F-16s, but throwing stones at my foes. I sit back and relax and reminisce on the past. Drinking blood, choking gas through the bullets that pass. Rockets blast, broken glass with a house full of ash. Screws of babies see their bodies collapse, and that's that. Their bodies in caskets, flowers in baskets. They murder in masses. We trapped with no passes. We choking on gases, but the gas is still sprayed. My oxygen fades, still trapped in a cage. But the pain never fades. See, the war is eternal. Imagine Arab Ben Frank writing her journals. Imagine Arab babies getting tossed in infernos. The Holocaust of Palestine, what a vicious circle. White phosphorus burns, you ask why we weep. Rest is for the guilty, feel me, I never sleep. My anger runs deep and my emotions are numb. So a middle finger to that soldier holding that gun.
Dear Lord, I know that you cry sometimes. Tears over Palestine. I'm trying to make it in this cold world, but there's more war and it's so hard up in Palestine.
Tears over Palestine.
I've seen so many of my friends, they passed and we're gone before they time. I'm trying to make it in this cold world, but there's more.
Feelings of pain can't define, man, it blows my mind. Maybe I'm insane, but I'm trying to be sane. The flame burns in my veins, fire can't be tamed. So I sit and reminisce on the times of bliss, of the years we enjoyed, though the war persists. Still resist with a stone in my fist. The Gaza Strip, West Bank, I give my mama a kiss before I flip. Man, it's thrilling and killing me, and no drug is healing me. His murder is haunting, and these chemicals ripping me. Historical narration that will make the blind see. Broken dreams, metal war machines, any zombies. Xanax tabs, Ambien pills to keep us asleep. While wicked troops quick to move and kill us like sheep. In every town that you see the blood spill in the streets. We was willing for peace, but now a militant fleet. The millions I see stuck up in refugee camps. The water ends in enemies' hands on settlement land. And all the death in my fam, we like the Kennedy clan. I would forgive if I could just clear my memory bank. Can't forget my brother that passed, I'll see him in paradise. I hope to see a killer's corpse eaten by parasites. We martyrs, but they depict us as villains. And my brother represents the Palestinian children.
Dear Lord, I know that you cry sometimes. Tears over Palestine. I'm trying to make it in this cold world, but there's more war and it's so hard up in Palestine.
Tears over Palestine.
I've seen so many of my friends, they passed and we're gone before they time. I'm trying to make it in this cold world, but there's more war and it's so hard up in Palestine.
Tears over Palestine.
Lord, I know that you cry sometimes. Tears over Palestine. I'm trying to make it in this cold world, but there's more war and it's so hard up in Palestine.
Tears over Palestine.
Welcome back to One Land, Many Voices. I'm Zaha Hassan with Ned Roche. We are talking today about the situation in Gaza since Israel began its bombing campaign there on July 8th, dubbed Operation Protective Edge. We are joined in the second segment by Raji Sarani. Raji is a renowned human rights attorney and director of the Palestinian Center for Human Rights based in Gaza City. Founded in 1995, the Palestinian Center for Human Rights is a nonprofit, non-governmental organization dedicated to protecting human rights, promoting the rule of law, and upholding democratic principles in the occupied Palestinian territory. It holds special consultative status with the Economic and Social Council of the United Nations and is an affiliate of the International Commission of Jurists. Raji is intimately familiar with the human rights abuses that he works tirelessly to defend against. In 1979, he was arrested and tortured by the Israelis and imprisoned for 3 years, and his home and office have been frequently subjected to raids by the Israeli army. Despite the challenges of working in a situation of military occupation, Raji's efforts on behalf of human rights have been recognized around the globe. In 1991, he received the Robert F. Kennedy Memorial Prize for Human Rights. And just last year, in 2013, Raji received the Right Livelihood Award, known as the alternative to the Nobel Prize. Raji Sarani, welcome to One Land, Many Voices.
Thank you.
Raji, Israel says that they are engaging in this bombing campaign in Gaza in order to stop the rockets that Hamas and others are firing into Israel. Is there any support in international law for this kind of bombardment of a densely populated civilian territory of 1.8 million people?
Since first day in this dirty campaign, Israel targeted directly and intentionally and publicly civilians and civilian targets. And as a result of that, firmly we can say after 8 days, according to facts we are having in our hands, children, women, elders who lost their lives, 77% of the total number of those who have been killed or injured has been civilians, women and children. We lost so far 194 civilians, 194 people killed. Out of them, more than 77% are civilians. Every hour passes, it counts. Also, we have 1,400 injured people, most of them lost parts and limbs of their bodies, and many of them will be left for the rest of their life handicapped. Hundreds, their life in real danger till this moment. Hundreds of houses has been destroyed completely, and hundreds of houses also have been destroyed partially. The civilians and civilian targets are in the eye of the storm. They are the target of this Israeli belligerent occupation campaign and war against Gaza. Nobody can sleep in Gaza. Gaza, 365 square kilometers, living in it, 2 million people. It's one of the most dense populated area on earth, but in Gaza, there is no shelter, there is no warning sign, and there is no safe place all over Gaza. So this war basically waged against civilians, and Israel in this war intentionally, publicly saying we are doing rule of jungle, and they are committing very serious war crimes.
Raji, Ilan Pape, the acclaimed Israeli Jewish historian, has referred to what is taking place in Gaza as incremental genocide. Do you agree?
In a way, yes. But this is too much what's going on. And the problem that Israel didn't do that for the first time in 2008-2009 at Pillar of Defense. They did that and they killed many civilians. And in 2012, they did the same thing. We all remember Goldstone Report. We all remember Samouni family, Daya family, Daro family, Oda Ghalia family, and all these families who lost their life and raised. But in this time, Israel publicly speaking about that, and they say, we are targeting houses. We are targeting the leaders of Hamas houses. And actually, till this moment, Israel, among all those who have been killed or injured, they didn't get any big fish of Hamas. Combatant or resistance people, 34 has been killed. That's the total number. I mean, they managed and they didn't manage, I mean, to kill either. This absolute security failure and Israel saying, no, we have no security failures, or this is very intentional policy to target civilians practicing rule of jungle in order to pressure the political leadership to take Israeli conditions.
Raji, there was a letter sent by Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas to Secretary General Ban Ki-moon requesting international protection for Palestinians. What do you make of this?
Geneva Conventions and international law, international humanitarian law, it's not Palestinian design. It's international law. It has been formed after the Second World War, after real atrocities and entire cities and villages and places razed. 70 million people almost lost their life among civilians in the Second World War. And Geneva Convention was designated to provide protection for civilians at the time of war. When Palestinian civilians are in the eye of the storm and they are the target, of course, protection is needed for them. That's why it's not only Ban Ki-moon, but Switzerland, as the depository state of the Geneva Convention, has the obligation to call upon meetings for the high contracting parties. Here we are talking about 184. They have legal duty to provide protection according to Article 1 of the Convention. Article 1 of the Convention states in a very clear-cut way that high contracting parties has to ensure the jury applicability of the Convention to provide protection for civilians at the time of war. Nobody's moving in this regard. This is long-standing position of the Palestinian Human Rights Organization and civil society asking for protection. Nobody's taking it. Also, Ban Ki-moon, as the Secretary General, he's entitled to provide the protection on behalf of the international community. And this is not happening, and this is unlikely. It's vice versa. Instead of holding Israel as a state, as occupation, who committed war crimes against civilians, it's vice versa. They pressure Palestinian leadership, especially U.S., Eastern Europe, Western Europe, in order not to sign and ratify the Rome status of the ICC, International Criminal Court, even holding Israel accountable. They are pressuring us not to do that. So that's why we think U.S., Western Europe involved practically in providing full political and legal immunity for this occupation and all the crimes they are committing against Palestinian civilians.
Israel claims that it's only interested in stopping the rocket fire from Hamas, but so many others claim that the real aim that Israel has is to destroy Hamas and the Hamas-Fatah reconciliation. And there have also been reports that Israel may be interested in Gaza's offshore natural gas reserves. What do you think Israel's purpose is behind this latest bombing campaign?
Three settlers has been kidnapped in the West Bank, and they have been killed. Not single Palestinian political faction declared responsibility. From first minute, they hold accountable all Hebron area and all the West Bank. And they killed from then 11 Palestinians in the West Bank. This was before Gaza war. 11 Palestinians, four of them teenagers, young. One of them burned life till death, Abu Khdeir. More than that, they arrested 29 Palestinian parliamentarians. They arrested 1,230 Palestinians from the West Bank, including all the prisoners released from West Bank in Shalit deal. More than that, they cracked down on institutions, organizations, civil society organizations, imposed curfew. They went house to house search all over Hebron area and many other areas in the West Bank. So they punished a nation for three has been killed, and they killed 11. They didn't satisfy that, but they hold Gaza responsible. They hold Hamas responsible. We are not here in defense of Hamas. Hamas resistance movement, Jihad Islamic resistance movement, Fatah the same, they can defend themselves. We are here in defense of Palestinian civilians who are subjugated to all these war crimes and violations. And since day one, as I said, they targeted the Palestinian people, the Palestinian civilians in the Gaza Strip. And the overwhelming majority among killings and injuries are Palestinians. They didn't leave open areas, farms, greenhouses, you know, private houses, etc., and destroyed. Gaza, like ghost city, no safe haven in Gaza, no safe place in Gaza, nobody able to sleep in the last 8 days. I can tell about real stories of horror where entire family raised, Abu Kawara family in Khan Yunis area raised entirely, El Hajj family raised entirely, Hamad family raised, Al-Batish family raised 17 people, I mean entirely raised and killed. This quality of war crime, 38 children among those who has been died, infants, you know, very young people. Among them, I mean, almost 42 women. We are talking about hundreds of injured people, among them, you know, women and children. So Israel really, I mean, going in a very orchestrated plan to crack down on Palestinians for many, many reasons. One, this is the 20th anniversary of Oslo Accords. And what we are having, we have the siege in Gaza, suffocating people socially and economically. And Gaza turned to be like animal farm with 65% of unemployment or unpaid, 90% under poverty line, and 85% who depend and count on ration distributed by UNRWA and World Food Program. We tend to be a nation of beggars, not because we are lazy. We have one of the highest percent of university graduates on earth. We have a fantastic working class. We have fantastic business community, but they de-developed us when they didn't allow anything to move in or outside of Gaza, no movement for goods or individuals. And more than that, they are bombing, killing, and three wars in 5 years. In Jerusalem, it's ethnic cleansing and Judaization, and the West Bank, a new brand of apartheid. This is, I mean, the fact, even before this war. So in the 20th anniversary of Oslo Accords, we are in the very worst position. On the 9th of July, it was the 10th anniversary of the advisory opinion of the ICJ, International Court of Justice, regarding this annexation apartheid war. It passed with no notice. And Israel have this fait accompli policy again. 500,000 Palestinian refugees again are refugees, and settlements are expanding vertically, horizontally. New settlements are built every day, and bypass roads connecting them with the Israeli cities, villages, and camps. So this is, what Israel is doing. They just want to keep Gaza under pressure. They want to keep Gaza de-developed. They want to create conditions and reasons, to bring Taliban, and that situation, Gaza. That's why Israel doesn't want Palestinian political unity. They don't want Palestinian geographical unity. Their best position to have the Palestinians divided so they can guarantee our strategical witness and our political suicide. Yes, of course, Israel doesn't want Palestinian unity, and they want to keep, the siege, and they want to keep the division among Palestinians. They are in the best position ever they can do. They have free hand in Gaza, and they have free hand in the West Bank.
Raji, you mentioned the 10th anniversary of the ICJ advisory opinion, which determined that Israel's construction of the wall of separation inside the occupied Palestinian territory is illegal. That was July 9th. There was a letter that was drafted by a number of legal scholars and human rights organizations requesting that Ban Ki-moon do a number of things on this anniversary of the ICJ opinion. One of them was the reconstituting of the UN Special Committee and Center Against Apartheid. Can you tell our listeners about the center and why the Palestinian Center for Human Rights and others are requesting the reconstituting of that center?
Well, what we are having now, it's a new brand of apartheid. I recall Edward Said first time when he came and visited Gaza, and he was just on his way back from South Africa, and he said, if this is not apartheid, what it can be called? Our counterpart South Africans, when they used to come and visit us, especially on the eve of the World Conference Against Racism, the first one in 2002, they were saying, obviously and clearly, you have much brutal apartheid than ours. We think, our apartheid was ugly, absolutely ugly, but this is much, much worse than we anticipated or expected. We didn't see anything like that or close to that. You are in the hell. We cannot understand how you tolerate that. That's why when World First Conference Against Racism convened in South Africa, out of 1,170 civil society organizations across the globe, only 17 objected the resolutions of the Congress, and they said, the rest of them, the overwhelming majority of the worldwide civil society organization, Israel, a new brand of apartheid. Israel should be held accountable for the war crime they are doing. And this was the landmark, that conference brought about. And since then, in a very serious, effective, systematic way, we wanted to do that, in as a Palestinian and as solidarity groups in support of Palestine. Then it was September 11th, which confused at the time everything, and that's why we are calling once and again for this, the Secretary General, to do that.
You've been listening to Raji Sarani of the Palestine Center for Human Rights. Raji, I want to thank you so much for joining us on One Land, Many Voices from your home in Gaza today. Be safe, be well, we send our best, and we are in solidarity with you and all the people around you.
Be sure of one thing. We might be tired, we might be exhausted. We might be, you know, receiving every 5 minutes a death coming from the sky by the F-16s and the Apache and the drones and the gunboats. But we believe we have just fair and right cause. We will defend it, and we know Freedom Price is very happy. But be very happy, and be sure that Palestinian people ready to do that, ready to pay for their freedom. Fighting for freedom, it's not right. It's also obligation on all free people. And be sure as well, no Palestinian will accept to be a good victim for a criminal belligerent occupation. We might be tired, bleeding, exhausted, but we are definite. We are defending just and fair and right cause. We are the stones of the valley. We are sure one day we shall overcome. We are strong, but we are much stronger with real committed free people like you. Thank you and keep solidarity.
Thank you so much, Raji. I so appreciate you taking the time out in your evening there where it's not really certain what's going on every night with the bombs that are dropping. So I really appreciate you taking the time to spend with us, talking to us. Take care.
We've been touched by your words. You've been listening to One Land, Many Voices on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. This show and all previous shows can be accessed by going to kboo.fm. and under programs, clicking on One Land, Many Voices. On behalf of my co-host Zaha Hassan and myself, Ned Roche, thanks for listening to our show, which is on the fourth Friday of each month at 9 a.m. Have a good one.
A blinding flash of white light lit up the sky over Gaza tonight. People running for cover, not knowing whether they're dead or alive. They came with their tanks and their planes, with ravaging fiery flames. And nothing remains, just a voice rising up in the smoky haze.
And they'll be mine. All mine, practicing 24 hours a day, 365 days a year.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Northwest Film Center screening of The 5,000 Fingers of Dr. T as part of the Cinema Under the Stars program on Thursday, August 7th at 7 p.m. The 5,000 Fingers of Dr. T is a musical fantasy film with the story, screenplay, and lyrics written by Dr. Seuss. Before the film, the Grand Style Orchestra will be playing a set of improvisational free jazz music. Again, that's The 5,000 Fingers of Dr. T, part of the Top Down Cinema series of the Northwest Film Center, on August 7th on the roof of the Hotel Deluxe's parking structure at Southwest 15th and Yamhill. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
I'm out to sing songs that'll prove to you that this is your world, and that if it's hit you pretty hard and knocked you down for a dozen loops, no matter how hard it's run you down and rolled over you, no matter what color, what size you are, how you're built, I am out to sing the songs that'll make you take pride in yourself.
I'm Lori Sonnenfeld.
And I'm Don Jacobson.
Together we bring you Moving On, Fridays from 12 noon to 1:30.
We feature both traditional and contemporary folk music.
We love to present live in-studio concerts from local and national musicians.
Tune in and you'll hear music that is socially progressive, moving, and heartfelt.
Music heard only on the left-hand edge of the dial and only on KBOO.
Every Friday, noon to 1:30.
We who believe in freedom. Freedom.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 10 a.m. And coming up on KBOO, Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. Followed at 10:15 with Flashpoints, with more on Israel's assault on the Gaza Strip. Also an interview with a member of Jews for Palestinian Right of Return. And international law expert Francis Boyle discusses Israel's actions as a potential genocide. At 11 on the Radio Zine, host Janka Soderberg gets an update on the latest deaths from Israeli bombings in Gaza with Mohammed Nabil. At 11:20, Roberta Schwartz of Neighbors for a Livable West Lynn talks about saving the white oak savanna of the Willamette Valley and an upcoming summer concert. At 11:40, host Daniel Flessis speaks with members of Dreamland Art Collective about a series of upcoming events that will act as micro-examinations into how culture and technology are shifting the structure of relationships. Thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you are not a current member, you can remedy that when you go to kboo.fm and click where it says Donate Today. In the meantime, stay tuned to 90.7 FM, KBOO Portland, your community radio.